Terry is joining us. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the program. My name is Simon Barrett, and this is our weekly look at current events. Joining me is author, activist, and barkeep, Sam Murphy. Sam, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Simon. It's a pleasure to be here. I think it's going to be a great show today.
Oh, it's going to be a wild time. How is life in Youngstown?
I feel like I'm in Florida because I guess the Zimmerman trial has come up here weather-wise. It's like it's either hot and muggy, and then it gets rainy, and it's very Floridian in our weather-keeping. So that's how much of an input that the Zimmerman trial has had in Ohio.
I rather like that. And from the wilds of L.A., we have the infamous, the one and only owner of Sunset Protection, John Perry. John, it is always a pleasure to talk to you.
Hey, Simon, I saw in the promo you're going to have a foreign policy expert on today. Unfortunately, John Bolton couldn't make it, so I'm here.
Great. when it comes to foreign policy, your name is the one that always reaches the top of my list.
I will bring unique insight to the problem, believe me.
Oh, I don't doubt that. also from LA, we have well-known and very well-respected attorney, Peter Haven. Peter, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much, Simon. It's good to be back. Happy belated 4th of July to everyone.
Right. It's likely to be a zoo today. Make sure that you have your seatbelt on.
I'm buckling up.
Right. And last but by no means least is my good buddy, Dave Neckel. Is he a reporter or a blogger? I don't know. But the one thing I do know is that he has press credentials to the George Zimmerman trial, and he's been, hurting his butt, sitting in the courtroom. Dave, welcome.
Hello, Simon. Hello, everyone. I do bring something in each day now that I attach to my kind of briefcase. It's really a computer case. And I call it my tushin because it's soft and it's really kept my butt from hurting every day. It's been a long kind of a trial. So,
it hasn't been a long trial, not like the Casey Anthony one.
Yeah, but those seats were padded. These seats aren't, so that makes a big difference when you're sitting on. It's like a wooden church pew. And that does make it more agonizing, and therefore it feels like a longer amount of time. 8 hours a day in there feels like 12.
In fact, what I wanted to do today was kick off with the George Zimmerman trial. Unlike Dave, I watched it from the comfort of my office chair on TV, but obviously you don't see everything. My wife Jan likes to watch Young the Restless, so I lose the TV signal for a while, but I have watched a good deal of it. The prosecution looks like a train wreck. I seriously doubt that the jury will find him guilty of an unpaid parking ticket, never mind second-degree murder. Peter, any thoughts?
Well, you know, oftentimes we believe that one side or the other can change the outcome of a case by doing a really great job, and that's kind of in my perception, it's a bit of a myth. I think a trial is designed to grind down everybody, and when it looks like one side's losing, that's usually just because that's where one side is supposed to be, because that's where the facts line up. So I don't know if the prosecution has really screwed anything up in this case, but I just think the facts are coming out the way that the facts are, and it appears that the facts are stacking up a little bit more on the side of the self-defense theory, which I think we all thought that all along. I mean, we all thought that there would be a reasonable doubt, at a minimum there would be a reasonable doubt as to his claim that he was defending himself from an attacker. And I'm not sure that much else matters other than whether or not there was a reasonable belief that he was being attacked and defended himself. I'm just curious about the makeup of the jury, and since we have somebody sitting in the gallery there, as uncomfortable as it is, I'm just curious about the makeup of the jury. And lots of times when you're watching the jury every day, you can kind of get a read for which way you think they might be reacting to some of the evidence.
Well, before, yeah. No, go ahead.
I want to hear what you, I'm curious what your thoughts are.
Well, okay, well, before I say that, which I do have something to say about the jury, I do want, I think that it's important to note that the state had to put on, they had to play all the tapes and stuff. They had to show George Zimmerman. Recordings, everything that basically George Zimmerman now testified for himself on his own behalf without taking the stand. But the state had to do that, or the defense would have. The defense would have anyway. They would have played all those tapes, everything in their own light, and it would have been different. Do you agree, Peter?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Taped
evidence was coming out, and one side was, if the state didn't play them, the defense would have, and I don't think Zimmerman is going to take the stand. I don't think so,
either.
But you never know. Yeah. So.
But the jury, now the jury, yeah.
The jury's
they pay attention. I sometimes see them like a tennis match where you look at the person on the witness stand, then they look at the defense attorney. They seem to be a little more attracted to, and I don't mean this in any other way, that they seem to be more attracted to O'Mara than they do to Wes. Okay? I think they find Wes to be a little bit too... combative, you know, but they seem to like the defense. I mean, the prosecution. I this is a very attentive jury. This is a little bit different from the Casey Anthony one, where you had 12 jurors and how many alternates to watch. So you had a lot more people. Here we have a total of 9 now, 1 juror left. So. They're really paying attention, especially one alternate in particular. So they lean forward, they take notes, they really are participating in the process, for lack of any better way to describe them.
Well, that's very good information, and that's as a trial attorney, that's precisely the kind of stuff we talk about after a day of trial. We talk about, you know, how did the jury react. What's the makeup of the jury? Male, female, any kind of racial makeup?
Well, the jury is all female. There's one male alternate. There are no blacks on the jury. There's one Hispanic woman who may have some black in her, but she's qualified as a Hispanic woman. So the rest are white, and they range in ages.
And five of the six are mothers.
That's interesting.
Yeah, well, and here's another interesting thing is that they do sit on the same side as the prosecution, so they see they're closer to Trayvon's family. Now, whether that's going to have any impact or not, I don't know. I don't think
so. And you say five out of six of the jurors are women?
No.
No, all six jurors are women.
Wow.
Are three alternates. The three alternates are two women and one male.
Very interesting.
And the man, he's a little on the older side. You know, is he as old as me? I don't think so. I'm 60. But he's somewhere in that 55 to 60-year-old range, I would guess. There's a woman there who might be my age, maybe a little bit older. There's a couple more older women. But then there's one of the alternates is quite young, E6, so I thought would never make it, and that's the one that the state fought against having. De La Rionda did not want that woman on the jury, and he fought and fought and fought and tried to use every strike he possibly could. But the judge says, no, I'm not going to allow it, and she's been a very good juror, what it looks like to me so far. I didn't think, and some of the journalists I spoke to, during breaks, we didn't think she was going to make it either. But you know what? She turned out to be a good juror so far.
Let's ask Sam the question. Sam, you are a barkeep, amongst other things. Is the trial playing in your bar, and what kind of response are you hearing from your patrons?
Yes, it's playing in the bar. The response is the same thing I kind of say to them is, why is this trial even going on? There's 13,000 murders a year in America. This case never should have been brought to trial. It's obvious. It's been brought to trial as a celebrity political lynch mob. I mean, it's really to get Zimmerman. It's obvious now with the facts coming out. And people are really, I'm starting to see and hear a people are pissed off that Zimmerman's on trial for this, based upon the fact that the prosecution has brought him out. I thought people thought it was going to be more of a, this guy wanted to be a wannabe cop, he was a cowboy, he walked around his neighborhood, twirling his guns, thinking he was John Wayne. He saw this poor little black kid with Skittles, and they remember, the one thing they remember, and it dawned on me last Friday when we were talking about this before both the mothers testified, was the pictures that the media showed after this became the case number one of the 13,000 murders last year in America. This became the number one murder in this country last year, were the pictures that the media would show of Zimmerman almost looking like a bad character actor from a bad movie, and little cute pictures of Trayvon Martin when he was like 12 years old. And that's what people are starting to see. I'm just giving you a very wide, diverse feedback from my customers and possibly myself, too, is that after I've seen a week to 10 days of this, and the prosecution's case, it's like the police were right in the first place. This was a case of self-defense, never should have been brought to trial. It was shoved down everybody's throat. And now we're going to, as the caller said last week, that we all were kind of unanimously talking about Peter and when you went on, is we had these two very intelligent callers, is that this is a case that's going to weigh heavy when the verdict comes out in this country because of the race implications that have been shoved down our throats.
Right. And, Sam, I'm going to come right back to you. But if I don't ask John his opinion, he's going to sneak off and eat Snickers bars. John, do you have any thoughts on this case?
I do, Simon. I'm down in these M&Ms as we speak. I'm, as usual, bringing keen insight to the question. Wouldn't expect anything less. He stole some of my thunder, but a couple things I'd like to say. My condolences to Dave, because much as I try, I can't avoid the case. My favorite shows even cover it, and every time I see some of those witnesses, they make my ears bleed, kind of like listening to you on Sunday, Simon.
Simon.
I'd like to say that coroner, I can't remember his name. I'd like Dave to speak to this after I'm done, if he could, just a few seconds. To me, the guy made Dennis Fung, the coroner on the O.J. trial, look competent. I've never heard someone speculating, a medical professional, on whether or not the victim suffered. He's supposed to be there to relate the facts, not engage in supposition. And like Sam was saying to follow up, I view the Zimmerman trial as political, not criminal. When Obama said that if I had a son, he'd look just like Trayvon, that pressured the system to prosecute Zimmerman and even convict him. And I think a lot of people are going to feel the pressure. And I think if he is convicted, the majority of people are going to even lose more or greater respect for the system and have further contempt for our judicial process. I look at it like, as I've said, we have political prisoners in this country, and Zimmerman could be one, just like Snowden, where the guilt or innocence of a defendant isn't based on the merits or evidence of the case, just political considerations that are going to rule the day and determine the individual's fate. And it's nothing new. That was very prominent in the Soviet system during the purge in the 30s. Guilt or innocence has nothing to do with whether or not someone's found guilty. Politics is everything, and it appears we're moving in that direction.
Dave, do you find this a political trial? Yeah, it would be easy to say that the feds didn't want to bring this to trial, that they would have much preferred that the case go away, but HLN, CNN, Fox, that they all got on it, and suddenly it became a big deal.
Right. That's the media. I mean, there is a separation between the media and the state. And also, what's very important to keep in mind is that the pictures of Trayvon, the young pictures of Trayvon, were released by his family, not the state. And this is the state of Florida versus George Zimmerman. So I tell people to throw those goddamn pictures out of the picture, because this has nothing to do with the state versus George Zimmerman. Okay? Whatever pictures are out there of Trayvon were on display, were given to the media by the family. Okay? What the media chooses to do with them is what probably stoked this. Okay? Now you have the thunder of the civil rights groups who jumped on this, because they had, I think, an ulterior motive, but in the end, I think it was a thing where the state, the Sanford police knew George. Hey, George, how you doing? You know, hey, George, how you doing? You know, that sort of a thing. And whatever George did, George got away with. Now, if you took this whole media circus out of it, it would be, and we all understand this, all the media in the courtroom, we all understand this, that it did go out of control. And without that civil rights stuff, this would have been a murder trial just like any other. And if you didn't have the civil rights organizations fighting for, all they're asking for is a day in court. That's all they ever wanted. The family, all the civil rights people involved are very smart about this, and they're saying if he's found not guilty, then that's the end of it. All we want is for an arrest and to bring this guy to court. And that's all that's happened so far. Now, did the Sanford police do everything they possibly could? Did the state attorney in charge of the 18th Circuit Court do everything? I don't know. I don't think this is strictly politically motivated, because the state does have a case. And the judge is not, you know, politically motivated when she denied the judgment of acquittal. So I don't know. I mean, there's everybody's got an opinion on this, but I don't think that it's just so one-sided that George is going to become some kind of a martyr if he's found guilty because of Karl Marx or anybody that has to do with communism, if that makes any sense.
Sure. Peter, do you have any comments on that?
Yeah, I do.
That?
As we've been talking, I've been researching the Florida self-defense laws, and I wanted to, you know, my thoughts basically support what everybody is saying, because, you know, I'm wondering what the prosecution is actually trying to prove in this case. I mean, it seems to me that what happened here, and I think these facts are relatively not in dispute, that Zimmerman saw this guy and approached him and in one form or another asked him pointed questions or told him to leave the area or something. And it appears that at one point a dispatcher encouraged him not to do that, but he approached him anyway. And then at some point after he approached him, they got into an altercation. The altercation got physical, and Zimmerman had a gun, and Zimmerman used it in defense of himself. So all those facts indicate to me that he's entitled to the defense of self-defense. Now, I'm not sure what the prosecution is trying to prove beyond that that shows he should be guilty of murder, and that's what I want to ask David.
But the thing is, Peter, you got to admit that you did say that is factual, that he used the gun in self-defense. If that's the truth, then why is there even a trial? I don't think he's going to be found guilty, but I don't think you can quantify anything as a fact.
Well, I'm not. I'm saying that these are the general allegations in the case, and what I'm saying basically supports your theory is, why is this going to trial? I don't know. That's a question that everybody else needs to answer. But my question is, what exactly is the prosecution trying to prove that's different from those set of facts? Because those set of facts, in my mind, if the jury believes that that's what happened, that constitutes a self-defense. What exactly is it that the prosecution is trying to prove here? Did Zimmerman just intentionally decide to stalk this guy, walk up behind him, pull a gun out, and then in some sort of malicious, calculated fashion just kill him because he figured he could get away with it with a crazy theory of self-defense? It seems to me that's what the prosecution would have to prove to avoid the self-defense. They would have to prove that Zimmerman cooked this up in some moment of time and basically hunted this guy and realized that he could get away with it if he just killed him here and now.
Here's where I have a problem with a conviction.
Wait, can I bring up something? And I want to go, you know, you talk, Dave, I understand what you're talking. You're there, you know, you see everything. You can, you know, see how people are reacting and all that. I'm going by what I've read about, what I've heard other people I respect talk about, such as the other people on the panel I'm with every Sunday, things I watch on television. But I go back to this whole thing from a year ago that this Zimmerman was put on trial by not because of the laws, not because of anything else other than the fact that it's a racial thing, and they're trying to balance out this poor kid's death, whether, you know, to make everybody feel good. Great example. Anybody remember what NBC did with the 911 tapes?
I remember.
That's media, though. I mean, you're still trying to
make media.
That
is media, and the media is part of the problem because it is part of the message, as Marshall McLuhan would say.
Well, then go after the media. I don't think the state of Florida is stupid enough to spend $1 million
on the state of Florida
just for
this guy. With celebrities, as John pointed out, the President of the United States got involved in this case. There was 13,000 murders last year. And then you look at the, like I said, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but I will. And you
look at president was totally wrong.
But look at, look at the case, as Peter's pointing out. The case of the prosecution is so weak. That's why the cops didn't bring a case in the first place, based upon their own initial, things. I mean, and now that you got the witnesses coming out, you got that young poor Rachel, whatever her name is, lied 3 times, 4 times, or whatever, you know, depending on who she's talking to. I mean, it's a very weak case at best, and it was. This is what happened.
I mean, if you look at, if you look at the statute itself, and here's where I don't think there's going to be a conviction. So I'm not necessarily against anyone here on the panel. I'm just saying that I sure as hell am not blaming it on the media. I'm sitting in court, and I'll tell you, it was very clear to every juror as they tramped, you know, came in and out to be questioned, that could they forget everything they heard in the media? Okay, so people out there like you, you listen to nothing but the media. I mean, we are the media. We report on it. But the statute itself says that there was an unlawful killing of a victim by an act imminently dangerous to another and demonstrating a depraved mind without regard for human life. Okay, now, taken from the beginning, when he got out of his truck, okay, well, maybe you could look at that as being depraved. But now you go into it was done from ill will, hatred, spite, or an evil intent. And I don't believe that George Zimmerman had necessarily ill will. The state is going with the contention that he said these assholes always get away and fucking punks. Excuse my language, but that's what was said, and that's something that he never said on any of the other phone calls. He was always clear and nice about it, but this time he said that, and this time the kid got dead. Now, that's what I think the state eventually found, that there's something wrong with this picture here. You know, because every other 911 or non-emergency phone call that he made, there was never anything about assholes always getting away, you know, or the other thing that he
So that's the reason to whip up a mob mentality, a different sort of, and a lynch mob. And that's what you got here.
Well, you're the mob mentality. I mean, the people that are reacting to it from the media, that's the mob mentality.
But they're the ones, along with the celebrities and along with certain politicians, have turned us into a lynch mob. And I agree with John on this. This guy never should have been brought to trial. And it's obvious just from the this is the best the prosecution has to offer. As Simon said, they couldn't talk their way out of a parking ticket.
I don't think it's – I agree. It's not the greatest thing that the state offered, but – but, you know, that still doesn't mean –
What mother isn't going to say – and that's how desperate they are. What mother isn't going to say, that's my kid? I mean, and that was already trumped by the brilliant move by the defense. Their first witness is Zimmerman's mother. I mean it's the theater of absurd.
Who they believe.
It's the theater of absurd. They're going to, you know.
So, in other words, you believe Zimmerman's mother and not Trayvon's mother.
No, I tell you what I believe. Again, I'm not in there like you are. I can only go by what's being said to me and what I'm reading and what I'm listening to other people say, whose opinions I respect in the law and law enforcement and whatnot, okay? So, based upon the witnesses, the depositions, that Rachel, I think, was a killer because she changed her story three times. She's not plausible. The police officers, I think, are very plausible. That one witness who heard him say, "Help me," the one guy who said that he thought he did not see fist being punched, but he saw Trayvon Martin on top in the red shirt.
You believe that guy then? But
well,
you
I will tell you
guy.
Why.
You
because
believe
his
some
red
of
shirt,
them, you don't believe others.
Red shirt. Well, yeah. I mean, well, there is, you know, some people. You know, yeah, they're believable witnesses for the defense, but they're the prosecution witnesses. His jacket, his red jacket, he was on the ground. Martin was on top of him. He was in fear of his life. I don't care if you're 15 years old or 17 or 18. Martin, he had to be in fear of his life. He had a gun.
I know.
I think it's a bigger question.
He was beaten within an inch of his life.
Let me say something
even
I think is very strange about this community.
Even his doctor said that.
Why did this town even have people, paid volunteers, walking around with handguns? That, to me, is the bigger question of a society gone wrong.
Why do
I? That we pay this community.
Okay. I'm going to call a halt here. Not because I disagree with you, Sam.
That's okay.
But I want to hear what John has to say.
Yeah, I'm really impressed with Sam's commentary. A couple things. Real quick, if you want to respond quickly, Peter. You're misstating the facts when you say Zimmerman contacted him and asked him some questions. I've never heard that. I don't think anything was ever said to him, and he was never approached prior to calling the local agency. Is that right, Dave?
Now, who was never what now?
He was never approached
who
or
was
contacted
never...
by Zimmerman. He called the police first.
Trayvon Martin? No, Trayvon Zimmerman is the was the neighborhood watch
but he
person.
No, Peter, you said earlier that
he was afraid of him, but
he
wasn't afraid
Trayvon.
Of him.
I don't think that's ever been said.
Well, so,
he never
so
questioned Trayvon. He never said a word to Trayvon.
So your understanding of the facts is that Zimmerman walked up to Trayvon Martin, pulled out a gun and shot him, and there was no exchange between the two at all? Is that your understanding of
what,
the facts?
No, there was no – in other words, Zimmerman never approached Trayvon and announced who he was.
Well, in other words, they had to get in close proximity. They had to get in close proximity to one another. So something you have to.
Well,
this
who's
is what you do.
About
you,
that? I was saying they didn't talk to each other.
Dave.
Yeah. Just like the judge says in the trial, let the person ask the question before you answer.
Yeah. What is everyone's understanding of how Zimmerman came to be in close proximity to Martin, and then what happened next? Apparently, John is under the belief that Zimmerman walked up to Martin, they got in close proximity to each other, and Zimmerman pulled out a gun and shot him. Now,
well,
I don't think
I
that's what happened.
Zimmerman never contacted him before. I could speak for myself. I just said you're misstating the facts.
Well, you just
Zimmerman
have to
analyze...
You have to analyze the facts logically. You have to ask yourself, what happened here?
Peter, I've never heard where Zimmerman contacted Trayvon and interrogated him before calling the police.
So what you're saying, John, is that Zimmerman walked up to him, didn't say a word, there was no communication at all, and Zimmerman pulled out a gun and shot him?
That's just as absurd as you stating earlier about Zimmerman contacting him. I don't know where you get this, but...
You keep saying contact. If I walk down the street and I say hi to somebody, you act like that's a contact. It's a communication.
That is. He never communicated with him.
Okay,
I never
well,
heard that. I don't know where you get
okay.
this.
I'm stating it naturally. The jury is going to sit in the box and they're going to try to fill in these gaps.
I mean, Dave,
and what you're saying,
wrong,
what you're saying, John, what you're saying, John, is that to date you haven't heard any evidence of any contact between the two,
I've never
and that
heard
may never come out because Zimmerman may never testify. But the jury is going to ask itself what happened. What happened here? There are gaps in the timeline. What happened?
It's going to believe it comes down to credibility. I think the DA is saying Zimmerman continued to follow him after he was told not to, and his defense is saying, no, he didn't. He got out of his car and was looking for an address, and Trayvon attacked him. I think that's the
so
two.
The theory is that Zimmerman – and where was Zimmerman standing when Trayvon attacked him?
Outside his vehicle.
So how far away was Trayvon from Zimmerman when Zimmerman when Trayvon attacked Zimmerman?
He came out of the bushes.
So how far away
right
was Trayvon?
Right?
How far away was
John,
Trayvon
John,
when he attacked Zimmerman?
John, you're outdoing yourself.
Just trying to set the record straight, Simon. If your naive listeners are listening to Peter, they're going to think Zimmerman walked up to him, said, "Who are you? What are you doing here?" And nothing like that happened. I don't know where he heard that. That's all. I don't know what happened, but I can tell
you. Well, you haven't set anything straight, John. You've just made it very confusing. Now, you tell me what happened on the night in question and why.
I don't know, but I know what didn't, and that's what you speculate.
Well, that just means you don't have evidence. The jury is going to sit in the panel, and they're going to ask themselves how these two came in close proximity to each other and what happened next. These are exact things the jury is going to say in their mind to themselves.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Zimmerman never went up to him and approached him and questioned what business he had in that community. He called.
I'm going to stop you right there, and I'm going to go to Dave. Now, as I understand it, the story is somewhat different. Dave, would you like to give us the thumbnail sketch?
Well, I sat there in the courtroom for 9 days and listened to testimony face to face. So it's not something that I'm making up when I say that George Zimmerman was not attacked when he got out of his truck, okay, and that Trayvon jumped out of bushes right there in his vehicle. I have no idea where that kind of a story started, and that's the kind of crap that goes on that really just goes on and on and on until the next thing you know, the Pope is going to name George Zimmerman a saint. You know, and the thing is, he's not saintly any way you look at it. He never should have gotten out of his truck with a loaded gun. Any way you look at it, that's the bottom line. Now, what transpired is a different story, okay? The timeline does not match, as Peter said, okay? He changed his story four times. George Zimmerman, obviously, because Trayvon was dead. He doesn't have a story to tell. And if you want the truth, you're going to get it from George Zimmerman, and if Trayvon Martin were still alive, he'd swear on the truth, too, and I guarantee those two versions would be completely different. Now, who you choose to believe depends on which kind of a racial line you take, okay? And George Zimmerman will gladly tell you he's got more black blood in him than you want to believe, because he didn't want any racism, you know, come into this trial. As soon as this trial's over, I'll almost speculate he's going to go back to being a white Hispanic. Now, what do you want to think, John? What do you want to think, Sam? I don't know. But you're not, you know, you're
well,
coming
you're
up
certainly
with
injecting race
that
into
are
this.
Not based on the truth.
David, you're certainly injecting race into this as a member of the media. I mean, you just blatantly came out and said it. I mean, come on. I mean, when did we put people on trial for the race? This is what happens when we live in a society that does not believe in due process of law anymore. My God, this guy's on trial because of his race or what race he may not be, and this and that. And it goes back to the bigger question.
I think that has more to do with the fact that a kid is dead.
No, I think it's not. If that was the case, there'd be 13,000 cases like this on television every day.
Well, then, so what are you saying, that this one shouldn't be... There shouldn't be 13,000.
No, this case is brought to trial because of race. You're absolutely right about that. But what the bigger question is a society that we live in that hires volunteers with guns who aren't properly trained to walk around the community
with
guns. That's the biggest question that's
not
being answered. The biggest question is why society. Wait a minute.
No guns in that neighborhood.
No, but why would
the neighborhood watch program says no guns?
Do any of the people on the panel, do you live in a community that you have a volunteer walking around with a handgun in his waistband? I don't, and I don't want to live in a society like that.
Okay, kids.
Well, that's George Zimmerman
doing that, not some
homeowners association.
I am going to talk over the top of all of you.
Okay.
Let's be nice.
Yeah.
You know, this is a gentle conversation, and the answer to the question is no. In my neighborhood, which I live on the edge of the hood, I don't see many guns. I just see, cars that are... converted and have really, really loud audio systems. So let's continue. Who wants to pick up from that point?
Well,
I can easily say that it was not the Homeowners Association or the Neighborhood Watch program that authorized the gun, to be put in George's pocket. This is George's own doing. This has nothing to do with any other association or anything else. No, the bylaws state in the Homeowners Association that you cannot use a firearm in that community. Okay, that's against the law. And the family of Trayvon Martin won over $1 million because of it already. Okay, that there's more to come on this. And secondly, the Neighborhood Watch Program is very explicit about not carrying firearms. The police tell you not to do that when they help you set up these programs. So George took it upon himself, Sam, to carry a gun. It had nothing to do with anything else.
Has that been brought up by the prosecution?
Well, yes.
I don't know, because I haven't seen that. So, I mean, I did not know.
Yes, it has. I'm telling you it has.
I believe you. You're there. I'm not.
Okay. The one and only piece of useful information I got out of the prosecution was the fact that the weapon was a Glock, a Glock 9. Can't remember the...
No, it was Kel-Tec.
Okay, but it's a 9mm.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
Right. Now, that gun is set with a magazine of 7 bullets. However, you can overload it. You can create an 8mm, sorry, an 8 bullet system by loading the gun, cocking it, taking the magazine out, and sticking an eighth bullet in it. And as I recall, part of the testimony was that there was only one shot fired, there was one in the chamber, and 6 left in the magazine. Well, who the hell walks around with, you know, a pistol that's overloaded? Answer me that, Dave.
Well, you know, I'll jump in for a second here. And, you know, I found that Dave and Sam were basically saying different versions of the same thing. And they're both, in my opinion, from what I hear, the whole thing. It's a dangerous world when people are walking around with guns. And Simon, you're basically saying the same thing, only you're taking it up a notch. The guy walking around with a gun, it's called chambering around. He chambered around so he could squeeze in an extra round of ammunition. And that is literally a loaded weapon because he's already got a bullet in the chamber ready to fire. And I don't know who walks around like that. And to me, that is a dangerous and scary thing to think about. And I wouldn't want people just walking around with loaded guns, rounds chambered, ready to go off. I don't like the thought of living in a world like that. It remains to be seen whether that evidence is enough to tip the scales of this particular trial. But I do think it raises bigger issues that we've talked about before. Every time you have people walking around with guns, you're inviting situations like this. As for this case, I think it comes down to a theory of self-defense. And I'm not sure it matters why, for purposes of this case, he had a loaded gun, what he intended to do with it in a general sense that night. If, you know, there has to have been some sort of thing that resulted in these two guys rolling around on the ground. And at that point, it probably became a self-defense situation. He was entitled, under my understanding of Florida law, to use whatever reasonable force he had at his disposal. But these other questions are probably the bigger questions, which are going to remain after this trial. And they're somewhat troubling questions. I don't like the idea of a guy walking around with a gun that's cocked and loaded and literally ready to fire.
Yeah, Dave, you have to understand me. I believe you're innocent until you're proven guilty, and the prosecution has to prove that beyond a reasonable doubt. And I don't think they have at this point, unless they've got a Perry Mason surprise witness. And I don't care what the color of the skin of the victim is.
Well, the prosecution
is,
has rested,
he's
so there's no surprise
proven guilty. And this country has gotten far away from that. We hang people before the facts are all brought out. Now, one great fact that I think I want to bring up is everyone said he was told when he called the police to stay away. That's BS. He's a 911 operator told her that, or him that, excuse me. In Ohio, where I live, a 911 operator is not supposed to say things like that because they're not the law. Now, if a police officer would have told him that, that would be a big, big thing, or someone of law enforcement. I don't know, Florida, Peter, maybe you know because you're familiar with the law. The 911
operator. I know, and I don't know if I'm on or not.
Does a 911 operator's advice constitute just a warning, or is it the same thing as heavy duty as a police officer giving that information not to pursue? It's important to me.
Well, I'm not. Go ahead, Dave. Go ahead.
I didn't know because I lost the phone call, so I didn't know whether I was back on or not.
No, you're on.
I know
on.
That
we can
I
hear
spoke
you.
To the. Okay, good. I spoke to the superintendent with the Seminole County Dispatcher's Office, and she told me what I wasn't aware of. She said that a dispatcher is no different than you and me. It's just a civilian, but their job is to advise. They can't tell you what to do, but they can offer you advice. So the advice to George Zimmerman was, okay, we don't need you to do that. And 911, okay.
That's not a police officer or...
It wasn't
a 911
call. It was a non-emergency call, but it still goes through the same dispatcher's office. The non-emergency call is just when you don't have something very important.
Sam, you're right.
And they were all told not to call 911 unless it was a real emergency.
Yeah, good. That's good information. So, Sam, you're right. It didn't constitute an order by police. There was no order by police. There was a recommendation from a person who said, basically words to the effect of, we don't recommend you follow them or we don't advise you to do that, something along those lines.
But that's a big difference than a police officer.
You're right.
Right.
You're
okay.
Right. And he obviously chose to continue to follow the guy.
Right. No, just for my own clarification. Thank
right.
you.
But I don't think there's any reason why they can't offer advice.
Dave,
I mean, that's part of the job is to keep people calm and,
David,
keep everything in
the
proper
perspective.
Can I ask
you one more question? I don't know this community
sure.
in Florida that well. Had there been a rash of break-ins, robberies,
yes.
mayhem?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
No, there had been.
Okay. I'm not familiar with the community at all.
And you know, according to Zimmerman, I mean, they were all perpetrated by young blacks. So, you know, because all of his phone calls, he made some 911, mostly NEN, non-emergency number phone calls. One person in there was convicted, a young male, black male, was convicted and sentenced to 5 years in prison. But it had, you know, when it was brought up, the judge was quick to point out that one had nothing to do with the other. In other words, you can't look and say, okay, well, some black kid in my neighborhood robbed someone, was caught, you know, went to trial, convicted, sentenced to prison. Now, all black kids can be looked at the same way.
What is the racial makeup of this community?
So you can't put every black kid into that. I'm sorry?
What is the racial makeup of, is it Sanford or Stanford?
It's a very mixed,
Peter, I know you. I was a shot at you.
Well, no, that's a gated community, and it's a whole big, it's a mix of nationalities in there. I've been in there many times, and I've seen blacks, whites, Indians, you name it. They're all Hispanic.
So it's a mixed race. It's a mixed race, blue collar.
Yes,
middle
it is.
Class.
So,
okay, I'm
I mean,
not
I
familiar
could see
with
if it was an all white. Yeah, if it was an all white community, and you saw blacks coming through the neighborhood, I could understand why you're going to be. You know, hey, that kid doesn't belong here. But, you know, when you have blacks in the neighborhood anyway, I don't know about that. It came down to a thing where George said he didn't recognize the kid. That was what it came down to. But it was, I mean, I went there at the precise time that George, when all this went on, and I don't think he would have been able to tell what the kid looked like because of the darkness. So I don't believe all that he said. You know, when it's pitch black and you're looking at a black kid, can you really see his face and say, I don't recognize him? Well, you can't recognize anybody. You couldn't recognize Sidney Poitier in there.
Okay. But why even bring it up, you know, in court?
You mean
why bring
because George said it. You mean bring up... The blacks who broke the burglaries. That was the defense saying that, you know, in defense of their client. But, you know, there were a lot of burglaries in here. And that's why he made those calls. That's one of the reasons why he went after Trayvon.
Right.
But wait a minute. Can I inject something? I'm going to go back to the 911 caller, the 911 operator. Didn't the 911, correct me if I'm wrong, Dave, but didn't the 911 operator testify that he, if it was a male or female, I can't remember, testified that they asked questions that almost would force Zimmerman to be like, which way did he go? Can you see him? What street are you near?
You know, these could be interpreted different ways. It was a male, but he never specifically asked for an address. And George gave an account to the police where the operator asked him for an address. But if you listen to that 911 tape, which way did he go? Okay,
right there, Zimmerman now is trying to be cooperative with the authority, and not 911
sure,
relying
but he
on,
ran
relying
toward
on
the
him.
South, George said that he ran toward the south entrance or exit, depending on which way you want to put it. So that would have been enough right there to tell the police to go to that exit or entrance. You know, that should have been the end of it. And to be honest with you, I don't believe George walked to the other side, because I went there and timed it from the time he got out of his vehicle to the time he got to that tee. And at that tee, it took me 44 seconds. It took him 11 seconds to get to that tee the first time, which means that he was running. Okay? Then he walked to the other side, he said, to get an address. Well, I even lingered over there and then came back to the tee where he said that he was hit by Trayvon. And yet there were still 44 seconds left that he was on the phone with the dispatcher. So I'm not buying into that story. That's my own account of it. That's not what we heard in court. I'm going to make sure that you understand that. You know,
yeah,
in my opinion, it went differently. The whole thing went differently, and it was a game of cat and mouse. And then they ran into each other, and I'm going to take what Dee Dee said, you know, because they have phone records that she was on the phone with Trayvon at the time. Okay? That is a fact, and that cannot be disputed. Now, what transpired over the phone between the two of them, that's an argument. But I believe that there was some kind of an interaction there, like, why are you following me for? And what are you doing in this neighborhood? And that makes sense, even though George never said that. But George never said that to anyone, so that doesn't mean that it's not true. It just means that he never gave that account in any of his testimony, and he might not take the stand to say either way. But you know, I think that there was something that happened somewhere. Now, did it happen at the T? I don't know. The way George gave the account, the whole thing transpired at the T. Kaboom, you knocked me down, you're banging my head up and down, you're punching me in the face, you're smothering me with one hand, my mouth, while you're covering my nose, pinching it with the other. How many hands does this kid have? I don't know. But then the body was found 40 feet south. People heard running back and forth, okay, somewhere, north, south, whatever way. Each witness had different accounts of it. They heard it, but hardly anybody saw it, almost like a ghost. You saw shadows. And it was quite dark out there. But still, there was some running back and forth. So, you know, George Zimmerman never gave that account of it. It happened at the T. End of story. Why was the body found 40 feet south?
All right. Okay. The big question, and the one that I'm surprised wasn't brought up, is exactly what you did in your little demonstration. You parked where you presume Zimmerman parked, and it took you 44 seconds, and yet it took him 11 seconds?
10 seconds, I think. Maybe 11. Yeah. And it's on a video on my YouTube where I timed it. And the reason why I know where he, and this came out during his own testimony, during the trial, where he said that he looked down that tee. When he first got to that tee, he looked down to see if he could find Trayvon. Well, I know I went there, and I looked down that tee, and it was dark, and you couldn't see much of anything. But it was when the deputy asked him, when did you get to that tee, or when did you look down that tee? And he said to her, it was when the dispatcher asked me, or said, are you following him? Okay, we don't need you to do that. Now we have a timeline from the ding, ding, ding of his car door to the time that the dispatcher said, okay, we don't need you to do that. Okay, that's all recorded. And that took 10 or 11 seconds from point A to point B. Now, I didn't set out to prove that, you know, when I did my video. That really had nothing to do with it. I just wanted to go from one point to the other and come back and see how it lined up with his 911 call. But when I got to that tee from the ding, ding, ding of where he said he parked his vehicle, it took me 43, 44 seconds, I believe, to get there. So it's impossible to walk that, you know, that distance in a quarter of the time that it took me.
John, any thoughts? And I'm sure you're a quick walker.
Power walking, Simon. Like my mind. I got a couple observations and then a question for the panel. I think there was race injected that night, but it wasn't by Zimmerman. It was by Trayvon Martin when he told his girlfriend, I'm being followed by a creepy-ass cracker, I think it was. And I think that showed racial animus. I also believe Trayvon had been suspended a couple days earlier from school for possession of burglary tools and possibly some stolen jewelry. I don't think that case was filed, but I think he was suspended from school at the time, as well as marijuana. And also, the question I have is, for anybody, if things had gone the other way and Zimmerman had not utilized lethal force, would he be the one dead and Trayvon on trial, and this story not even receive a footnote like the thousands of black kids that Sam mentioned earlier killed by gangs?
Good question.
Oh, I got Simon.
Well.
Okay. Who wants to tackle John at his finest?
Well, I think that David John just made a lot of really great points. I really like Dave distinguishing between what the evidence is and what the facts support, because that's what we have to do. And I like that last question posed by John. I mean, I think my biggest response to that last question is I don't know how Trayvon would have killed Zimmerman, but for the fact that he got a hold of Zimmerman's gun. But I guess that's not really the point of the question. The point of the question is what would have happened if Trayvon had killed Zimmerman there. And I suspect...
Hey, Peter, for speculation and the story, he pounded his head into the ground and
okay.
crushed his skull.
I suspect that if that had happened, I suspect, given the fact that this is a racially charged case and there's no way to avoid it, it's present just by the nature of the parties, that it would still probably create a public issue, because if Trayvon had killed Zimmerman in the manner that you suggest, then Trayvon would have been prosecuted for murder, and then the whole theory of Trayvon's defense of being chased by this suspicious white guy would have emerged, and I suspect there would still be an outcry over the unfair prosecution of a person who was himself actually a victim and merely trying to defend himself. And then that actually raises the next question. If, in fact, again, it all, for me, everything comes down to this tussle on the ground. Once they get on the ground and they're rolling around and they're fighting, it becomes an issue of self-defense by either party. And so
Peter,
Trayvon's
don't you
defense
a lot of
would have been self-defense.
Positions would be reversed.
Yeah, I think there's a I think they'd
yeah,
be reversed
came,
on the law.
Who came into the fight with a gun?
Yeah,
I mean, who came
thing.
In to start a gunfight? You know, I mean, that's, you know, it really goes back to the issue of this guy with a loaded, ready to fire gun, who knew when he got out of his vehicle that he was carrying the damn thing.
Yeah,
legal gun.
You know, so it
was
doesn't
illegal.
Become, you know, this
is it
whole
legal
thing
to carry
about
the gun?
Anything else.
Is it legal to carry the gun?
This has This has nothing to do with legality.
Well, no. The gun is legal. No, he's
right.
Bringing up a point. He can't. Well, then you don't go to in a neighborhood like that. From what you're telling me, everyone should be carrying a gun, which goes back to what Peter says. Isn't that a shame on our society? And I agree with you.
All right, but gun beats Skittles every time.
Every time.
Oh.
And
not according to Manny.
Trayvon, if he really wanted to attack the guy, he could have hit him with that can in the head with that can of soda. That can of soda was never touched. Stayed in his pocket the whole time. And that would have been a weapon that I would have used against George Zimmerman.
He did a pretty good job. He broke his nose. And he smacked his head a couple times, and getting punched in the nose by somebody, regardless of who initiated or whatnot, he was on top.
Now that's worth shooting somebody over for sure. Getting popped in the nose.
Well, listen. I've seen enough. You don't think? Well, no. If you fear of your life, yeah, it is. If you're in fear of your life and
you
have a gun, you're gonna let the guy punch, because if once he breaks your nose. What's next going
to
do?
Some people are very quick to pull a trigger. I will say that.
I don't know. Yeah, glad I've never been in that position. But if someone would jump me, and I'm not saying that, and I have a gun that's legal, I'm supposed to have it, I'm allowed to have it, and the guy's beating the shit out of me, I'd like to think I'm going to blow him away. I'd like to think most people would, too. Or if I had a club, hit him over the head, or whatever it should be. I'm glad I don't walk around with a carry gun and do all that precisely. For that, because in today's society,
precisely.
We don't know
that's
what's
right.
Happen.
Why walk around with a gun?
Why would I walk around?
Johnny,
I'm blessed that I don't live in a community like Sanford, Florida, but I do live next to a more.
Yeah.
I do, and I own the bar in a very dangerous place known Youngstown, Ohio, which per capita has more murders than Sanford, Florida ever will be. And yeah, I had to carry a gun around there, and I didn't like it. And that's why I get out of that's why I get out of that community, because that's a whole other.
So you're not, but you're in the bar business now, right?
I'm in the bar business now, and I've always been in the bar business, and now because of our
in Ohio,
the state of Ohio, they allow guns in the bars. I mean, it's become ludicrous.
No, I mean, are you still a bar owner in Ohio?
I am still a bar owner in Ohio. I do not own the one that is in that the city did change, but that's one of many things I do. I also write novels. And I'm lucky enough to be on this show every Sunday. I'm grateful that I'm on it. But I will tell you one thing as far as John's questions goes. John, I think if over this weekend, this July 4th weekend, nine people, were murdered and shot in Chicago. Okay? Nine.
I think 50 were shot. Nine were murdered,
Nine were murdered, all right? Yeah, we don't talk about that. And that's happening every weekend in this country, in Chicago. Yet the whole world is focused on Martin versus Zimmerman. And
Sam,
one reason only, race. And it's despicable.
Right. It's kind of like man bites dog. But
I would think that
guys,
the best thing to do is just not to pay attention to it. You know, that would be the best advice.
If it went the other way around, John's absolutely right. No one would be paying attention to this. It'd be another story. That down in Florida, they'd be paying attention to it, but it wouldn't be getting the national attention that it's getting. This is getting national attention because of celebrityism and the media obsessed with keeping the race war going.
Hey, Sam, let me ask you guys a question, and Peter, I know it's subjective, but referring to the law, how close do you have to be to the point of unconsciousness or death to utilize deadly force?
According to Dave, pretty good, but you have to be almost dead.
Yeah, of course,
well,
that's what I'm saying. It's subjective, right, Peter?
As I understand Florida's laws, the belief system that the jury is going to be asked to impose on the defendant is whether or not the defendant's belief was actual, which is subjective.
Mm-hmm.
He has to have had, objectively speaking, he has to have had, this is where it gets crazy. Objectively speaking, he has to have had sufficient facts to make him reasonably afraid for his life. And the fear that he has, whatever it is, has to be an actual belief. So it's going to be a combination of the two. It always is. But if there is any objective fact that puts you reasonably in fear of your life, and then you are actually afraid that your life might be seriously harmed, taken away, etc., then as I read the Florida statutes, you're justified in using deadly force. Now, the question that's also raised, so The short answer to your question, John, is if you think that you're going to become unconscious, there's a threat you're going to become unconscious, that you could cause some sort of serious injury to yourself, it doesn't require that you be afraid for your life. If you think you're in serious bodily harm,
right,
you're entitled to use deadly force.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, John, Peter, that goes to state of mind, which an attorney could never ask that kind of question.
Yeah.
So they're asking the jury to do something impossible, get in Zimmerman's mind and what he thought at the moment.
Well, the jury is going to have to do that, and yes, you can ask those questions. The jury, they're going to use all the evidence they've got, which is why I was asking some of the questions I was asking earlier, and the jury's going to make an assessment. Was this person reasonably in fear of his life? And it seems to me, as I read the law in Florida, that if there is any reasonable doubt as to whether or not that fear was actually held and believed by Zimmerman, and it was reasonable to do so, then they have to acquit him. And I think that's where
Peter, let me
all
ask
this...
you this question. Let me ask you this question, because this is what I tell people. Let's say I had some 300-pound galoot running after me, and he's yelling and screaming, I'm going to kill you, I'm going to kill you. And just before he reaches me, I'm in fear of my life. I pull out my gun, and I shoot him dead. Okay? Now, in the end, he's lying on the ground dead, and I don't have a scratch on me. And I'm charged with second-degree murder. What's
yeah.
my defense?
Well, I
and
don't
that's
know
what I tell people, because there
well,
is, you can't determine that when a
yes,
person
you can.
Is in fear of their life.
Yes, you can. You we do the best we can. And the answer to your question is you have a defense of self-defense. You may not remember this. Some of you might. But a few years ago in Louisiana, this could have been 20 years ago, 10 years ago, I think it was Halloween. And there was some guy on the street in Louisiana, and he had a home, and he didn't like trick-or-treaters, and some Japanese exchange students came up to his house
yep.
and knocked on his door, and he killed him. He killed him.
And
if I remember correctly, he walked. Now,
but
so
that
was
Castle Doctrine related.
Well, it's all basically a different – every state has little twists on it, but it's all basically the same version of self-defense. And it all comes down to whether or not the jury believes that that you honestly and reasonably felt that your life was in danger. And they make that determination because they have to make that determination. And if they have a reasonable doubt as to whether or not your life was actually reasonably – and you truly believed it was in danger, then they are instructed to acquit you. Now, so the jury is going to have to go back in, and they're going to have to piece together the facts. And I suspect that you know, it's very telling that Zimmerman, it appears that Zimmerman's not going to testify, because maybe he will. But at present, I think I'm saying no to that question based on my perception that the prosecution hasn't yet proven its case. If the prosecution was ahead, or if there was any doubt about this issue, I think they'd have to put Zimmerman on the stand. But that's what
you're
trying
to
do.
I agree with you.
Yeah, that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to show the jury that there are enough facts here that the defendant reasonably apprehended, feared for his life, and he truly had that belief.
I think O'Mara recognizes that he's winning.
Well, we'll see.
In my scenario.
We'll see. Now, your example, you said that some big 300-pound guy chased you. He said he was going to kill you, and you ran and ran and ran, and then finally you turned around. And leaving aside the legality or illegality of the fact that you're possessing a firearm, which is a separate offense, and it's a different offense, you turn around and kill him. If the jury believes you, now, you're probably going to have to testify unless you have witnesses, but if the jury believes you, then they will be instructed to acquit. If the jury thinks that you had a prior grudge against this guy and you wanted to set this up, and so you got yourself in a situation where you had a chance to pop a bullet in him, and then you told everybody it was all – and that seems to be what the prosecution's basic theory here is, that Zimmerman basically went out looking for a guy to kill that night. He found Trayvon. And he kind of staged it so that it would look like self-defense, but really he wanted to kill him the whole time. Or he wanted to kill him from the moment he saw him, or something like that.
No, I don't think that's got anything to do with it. The state's not really saying that Zimmerman went out in search of killing someone. It was something that went horribly wrong. But you
well,
know,
then I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure what the state is trying to prove, because this is the question I asked earlier. That if you're going to try to win a case, you have to have a theory of what you're trying to present to the jury. And if the prosecution is just going through the motions, and they're not even trying to demonstrate a theory of what they think happened here, then I'm not really sure what the prosecution's doing.
Well, they're saying that George got out of his car, went after the kid, not necessarily kill him, but they went after, you know, so he went after this kid, and the state is sticking with the testimony of Rachel Gentel, who said, what are you doing around here? You know, why are you following me for? What are you doing around here? Hey, and then she heard Trayvon say, get off me, get off me. So that put Zimmerman on top. Okay, that's the last thing they know. Bang, gun goes off.
Okay.
Now, there was some kind of a fight. The state is not saying that Trayvon never laid a punch. They're saying they don't know what caused the injury, but they can't say for sure. The only person who's saying that for sure is George Zimmerman. And the state is saying, but we've already proved that he's a liar by his own testimony. So you can't believe a word that he says. And the other guy's dead.
Well,
so
the problem...
here we have this ill will and the depraved mind.
Well, the problem with the prosecution's theory is you've just laid it out, and I agree with you. That makes sense to me, as you've just laid it out, that he may still qualify for the self-defense because he may have provoked the interaction, but if by provoking it he went up to the guy and did or said or just appeared, whatever it was, if that caused Martin to launch into some physical assault of him, then that, under the Florida law, as I understand it, gives Zimmerman the right to still use deadly force, because the force that was brought back against him was much greater than the situation would have warranted. So there's been no
witnesses say either way. In other words, the state can't prove that Zimmerman wasn't punching him. I mean, that Trayvon wasn't punching him, and the state can't prove that he wasn't, and the defense can't prove that he was.
That's right.
Most likely.
That's right.
The only person who came close was this one witness who saw it from behind, and it looked like that ground and pound MMA, but he never saw any punches land. Therefore, it could have been Trayvon fighting over the gun. I mean, there's no way to prove, because George was just not injured enough. He had one hit to the face, and, you know, he could have not been knocked down and gotten the injury on his head there. You know, he got two little cuts. He could have bounced off the ground and hit his head again. You know, boom,
well,
second
when you,
cut. The physician's assistant said he required no stitches, that, you know, he had no real concussion, and he was just not injured enough.
Well, when you talk when you talk about there's no way to prove, those are the phrases that ring of acquittals.
Right.
Yeah, it does. It absolutely does.
Okay.
You're right, Peter. I absolutely agree with you.
All right. And this is where I want to go round the table and ask people's opinion on what the eventual outcome is going to be. Personally, I think that Zimmerman is going to walk away scot-free. Sure, you know, he might have to do a couple of hours of community service, but I don't see anything more important than that. Peter, what do you think the verdict's going to be?
Well, you know, again, you have to. I try to analyze these based on what the law, the jury's going to be read to at the closing argument. They're going to tell the jury, this is the law, and if you find these facts, you rule this way. If you find these facts, you must rule this way. And it sounds to me like that jury is going to conclude that they don't have enough proof to convict on the charges that the prosecution alleges. So unless, that's what my gut's telling me. The jury won't convict on these charges. As to anyone ever getting away with something like this scot-free, I'm not sure you ever escape anything like this scot-free. There's always a price to be paid for your actions and your conduct. And even when you quote-unquote walk away, you don't really walk away. Zimmerman will have a price to pay. He's already paid part of the price, even if he's acquitted. There's always a price to pay for everything we do, and he'll have to pay something. Yeah, like OJ, exactly. You never quite get away with it, in my opinion. There's always some other price to pay.
How about you, Sam?
First of all, Peter, I want to thank you for sending me those jury instructions. I was skimming them while you were going things, and it brought up a lot in my mind. The power of the Internet, by the way.
Yeah.
I think I see a lot of reasonable doubt. And again, I'm also one of the people who believes in total innocence until they're proven guilty. And I think in this case, they're not going to be able to do that unless there's some surprise coming that I don't think that they can do unless it's a television show. I think he's going to be found innocent. And I think we're going to have the race riots that we do every 20 years in this country. And unfortunately, that's what's going to happen. But go back to our history. Every 20 years or so, there's race riots, and the fuse was struck last year when they put this guy on trial. It's all about racial issues.
Sam,
I don't want to see that happen. I'm not trying to fan the flame. It's just that history always repeats itself. We as a society never address this issue. We think because we elected an African-American president, everything is hunky-dory with our race relations, and they're not. And this is proof positive of it. John always bangs the drum of, look what's going on in Chicago, and he's right. This weekend, 40 shootings, 9 deaths, and whatnot. It's all black-on-black crime. It's happening for a reason. And until we get to the root causes of these problems, are going to continue. And then we're going to have these poor cases come up with the Zimmermans of the world, the Trayvon Martins of the world, stripped naked in front of all of us for whatever. And everyone's gets their, they all get what they want out of it. Obviously, the networks are getting what they want out of it is ratings. And that's not helping our society. And what's going to happen is, the race wars are going to happen if Zimmerman's found innocent. And I'm sorry to say that.
Sam, I'm in total agreement with you.
Oh, my God, I'm having a big one.
Yeah. Remember, push.
Don't forget to breathe.
I'm laughing. Okay, excuse me. I'm not.
Okay, John, I have to ask you. What's your prediction?
Just don't insult me and say you agree with me, please. A couple things. I thought I had a high pain tolerance, but Dave's got me beat. I would never suggest to anyone whose nose is broken and back of the head being pounded into the cement like Bob Vila on crack not to use deadly force, because you might just end up dead. My prediction, Simon, on the trial, and mind you, I predicted murder, one guilt for O.J. and Casey Anthony. I'm going to say manslaughter, because I think the jury is going to be intimidated because of the reporting, and their addresses will come out, and they won't want to have retribution sought against them. And I think it'll be appealed, and he'll probably win on appeal.
Wow. That's actually
and Peter could represent him.
I would love to handle that appeal. That would be interesting.
I think you could get him off, Peter.
No, I don't think so, but I would still.
The investigator.
John, I'm amazed. For once, you're actually part of the real world.
You guys have that effect on me, I guess, Simon. Don't tell Manny, though.
Okay, I won't. I promise I won't. Dave, you've tried to be circumspect and non-judgmental, but where do you see this ending?
To be honest with you, I'll tell you, this jury is they're tedious. They're taking notes. They're paying close attention. I don't know whether it's going to be a quick verdict or not, but you know, I believe that they're not going to be intimidated by race. They're not going to be intimidated by anyone. I mean, certainly, excuse me, Casey Anthony Anthony's jurors were not intimidated, and no one ever really went after him either. So my take on it is quite simple, not guilty. And unless the state can come back on cross-examination and recrosses or whatever, I don't see this changing. The way I look at it right now is that the state did not prove its case. You've got a very strong team of defense attorneys taking over. They took over Friday, okay? But the meat of it is coming up, and it's going to be really tough, okay? And I don't see the state overcoming this defense team at this point. So my guess, my prediction is not guilty.
You don't even see a, you know, a manslaughter charge?
If you know, there is that possibility, but you have to understand that in the state of Florida with the use of a gun, it's a felony manslaughter conviction. Anytime a felony is committed with a gun, it's got minimum mandatory sentences. In this case, you've got into different levels, but the highest level, which is this one, is somebody died at the hands of a gun. And if he's convicted of any type of felony related to this, he's going to go to jail for a minimum mandatory 25 years. So the jury might sit there, like the way I look at it, and I think a lot of the journalists look at it, well, the state did show that this guy, man, he did something terribly wrong here. But does it reach the level of second-degree murder or felony manslaughter? Did the state prove that? Right now, I'm going to say no. You know, it has nothing to do with my personal convictions. I just don't feel that the state proved it. Not yet. Now, they've got closing arguments to come, too, along with crosses and recrosses. So I don't know. That's just my take on it.
Okay. Peter, your thoughts. Is it possible that the prosecution can pull something out of the, out of the mire?
Well, I don't see it. It's pretty tough to hit a home run when you're not even at bat. And the prosecution, as I understand it, has rested. Now they can move to reopen their case, but that may or may not happen. But basically, what I think is going to happen next is the defense is going to parade out a few more witnesses just to put some icing on the cake. And a couple of these witnesses, or at least one of them, will be some expert who will testify that the injuries that Zimmerman sustained were actually more significant than the prosecution's expert indicated. And once they start gilding that lily, so to speak, I think that there's going to be sufficient evidence to, at a minimum, create reasonable doubt that he was in fear for his life. And, you know, meeting the elements of manslaughter is one thing, but you completely negate those elements if you put enough evidence forward to establish self-defense. So given the fact that the defense now gets to put on its case, and I think they are going to build on, among other things, the injuries that Zimmerman sustained, and just they're going to build on the self-defense theory, I think that will be difficult for the prosecution to overcome. And I don't see anything in closing argument changing that, although I do think that, Dave, if you're there, I suspect that they will be talking about that jury instruction that I emailed to everybody a little while ago, because that's what you have to do in closing. You have to take your evidence.
I don't think I did.
Well, you'll get it. But the lawyers have to take the evidence that they presented
it,
and they got to line it up. They got to say, well, you're going to get this instruction, and this is the evidence that supports it, and blah, blah, blah. But generally speaking, I think they will fail to prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt.
Right.
Yeah, I agree.
Although,
go ahead, Dave.
No, I was just going to say that the physician's assistant who attended to Zimmerman the following day really said the injuries weren't that bad. So they were never life-threatening. So I think that the defense may try and use other way, you know, this objective, you know, not necessary. I mean, he was injured, but where do you draw the line? You know,
well,
Zimmerman says he was beaten to a pulp. Yeah.
As you pointed out, Dave, you don't have to be injured to believe that you're in reasonable fear of your life.
That's right, yeah. And I think that's more important than trying to prove how close to death he was, because even their own, you know, his own physician's assistant said that he wasn't. So the state can throw that right back down the defense's throat again if it's brought up. I think this is a very, very smart defense. And, I mean, Mark O'Mara is incredible, and so is Don West. You know, those guys are really impressing me.
Who was the one with the knockout joke?
I don't think that that was Don West. That wasn't good, but...
That wasn't very impressive to me.
But I understood what... No, it wasn't. But I understood what his message was, that you could get on the jury if you didn't know who George Zimmerman was. You know, but no, it fell flat, and rightfully so. But he's made some good. He's gotten a lot from the witnesses. You know, just from his methodical slow. He's very slow and methodical. And once he takes a stand, you know it's going to be a boring, long, long afternoon. But he gets the job done, and that's the bottom line.
Okay, we're just about out of time, but I do want to talk about the delightful lady Chantelle, whatever her name is. She came across
Rachel
as a,
Chantelle.
Right. She came across as a complete moron. No respect for anyone. She even managed to say that, you know, oh, crazy ass cracker. Oh, that's not a racial term.
Right.
Yep. On day two, completely different person. There had been some coaching. Don't you think, Dave?
It would certainly appear that way. I mean, but you know, I think, you know, to try and make this as brief as possible, you got to look at the fact that, you know, I have a black friend, and his wife used to teach down at that school where she attended, or still attends. She's 19 years old, and she's going to be a senior in high school. There's a language issue there. Her parents are Haitian. They speak Creole. She speaks two or three languages. She grew up in the ghetto. She's got that urban speak, that Ebonic speak. She's scared to death of the police, like everybody else that grows up in the ghetto that's black. So she didn't come into this being the most brilliant-looking person in the world. But I think she did all right. And I think one of the reasons why she ended up gaining credibility is because of what my father said after the end of the day. And he's a real conservative guy. He said that Don West sold the jury, and then he bought it back. He gave the jury what they needed to know from her, and he kept going and going and going. And the more she opened her mouth, the more credible she seemed. And she was no dummy in the end at all, by any means.
Oh,
and
come on.
Said, yes, sir.
Are we talking about the same person?
You have to admit that day one was an absolute disaster.
Yeah, it was. You know, she's got imperfect grammar. She comes from a completely different world. And there's separate rules of engagement, you know, that you are being a white person sitting watching it on TV or whatever, you're not going to understand anything about that inner city culture like that. So there's problems with her going right into it. You know, oh, my God, she's obese. She's, you know, whatever. There's just nothing about her that most people would find all that appealing. Now, when I say most people, I'm personally, you know, yeah, I'm talking about white people for the most part. And I'm white.
Okay, here's the $64,000 question. It's okay for her to call white people crackers, but let me guess, it would be a whole different world if she was white and use the N-word.
Well, he used the N-word on George. He called George that. But, you know, I think what West tried to do was transfer the racial profiling onus from Zimmerman to Martin. You know, in other words, when Martin said cracker, you know, creepy-ass cracker, it took the racial profiling off of Zimmerman and put it on Trayvon. Now Trayvon was doing the racial profiling. But, you know, in the end, cracker is a term, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean racism. It's not like using the N-word. You know, it's just not that bad of a word. And, yeah, she admitted that we call people crackers, white people crackers. But she said, but usually you don't use the word creepy with it. You know, it's just the term cracker for white people. But, you know, you grow up in that inner city ghetto, and you don't have a lot of, you don't know that much about white people because they don't come and visit you. They don't do anything for you. You know, you're in your own quagmire and you're stuck with it. You don't want the police to come to your benefit because all they want to do is interrogate you and arrest you. I mean, that's a whole different world in that it's like a different country inside that ghetto. So I don't know if I would necessarily look at cracker. I mean, you got to remember that there are different ways to look at the history of the term cracker, but one is that the Florida, you know, the farm of the cattle herders, they didn't use lassos. They used track the whip to move the cattle into place. But also during slave times, slave foreman used whips on the slaves. And because they cracked that whip on the slaves, they became known as crackers. And so there's a long-standing heritage there, if that's where it came from. So I don't know. I mean, is it really, you know, that bad of a term? I don't know.
I don't think so.
Honestly,
I don't know.
I don't think the two words equate very well, you know.
Wait a minute.
No.
The C word, and I'm talking about the beginning CR word, and the NI word is just like the F word. It is used all the time, everywhere, by black rap stars. It's in the movie. They use it more than white people do, but it's not. That's okay.
Oh, you're nothing but a cracker loving.
That's okay, right? What's good enough for the gooch is good enough for the gander. If that word is so socially acceptable and sells millions of records and millions of rap songs, and I listen to it all the time on people play it, African-Americans and white Americans, play it on the jukebox, and no one complains about it because it's part of everyday language and in modern music day money-making ability. What's the big deal about it anymore?
Can we please have Paula Deen on next week's show? Please. Can we just please?
Yeah, that was years ago. Paula Deen said something. Paula Deen got a D. I mean, that's another ridiculous thing, too. That's ridiculous. 40 years ago. If that was the case, we'd all be locked in our rooms without supper when we were 6 years old, never come out.
Yeah, well, it helped get OJ off, if you think about it, because Mark, what's his name, said he never used the N-word. You know, and that took away his, Mark Furman, that took away his credibility.
Well, everybody's got to decide for themselves how they feel about this. But for me personally, the C word doesn't bother me very much. And I don't treat the N word like that at all. I think it's just, you know, you can't say it You just can't say it. And
no,
you know, there's no way around it.
There's no seeing Paula Deen.
Well, you know, get Paula Deen out here. Let's see what she has to say.
Well, where's she from? Because cracker really, yeah, that's really a Georgia and Florida term.
I would love to hear Paula Deen explain the origin of the word cracker. I would love to hear that.
You mean Paula want a cracker?
Yeah, that's where
it
came
from.
Yeah, she's
going to sit there and give you some kind of a recipe for whole wheat crackers, I think.
I want to hear what John has to say about this.
Oh, thanks, Sam.
You're welcome.
I've been called a cracker a number of times. California, anyway.
And that's okay, too, I mean.
In California, it's a jail term. They don't use it on the street much. It's a term of derision and a pejorative. But they really only use that, like, in the jail system. It's not used too much out on the street. But I'd like to say something to Dave real quick. I didn't sit on the trial, but he might have been on a bathroom break. But as far as Rachel's credibility, she was given a letter to read that she had supposedly authored to Trayvon's mom and couldn't read cursive.
No,
as
she did not author it.
When she claimed to have written that letter, she lost all credibility after that, and I wouldn't have believed anything she said.
So in other words, when she said Trayvon called Zimmerman a creepy-ass cracker, then that's a lie, too. So why even believe that? So what you're doing is you're selecting what you choose to believe and what you choose not to believe.
If someone tells me they wrote this letter and it comes out they didn't, I don't have any credibility. Trayvon never said creepy-ass cracker. I've been in court.
John, as far as you're concerned, Trayvon never said that.
I think she's written a letter and didn't and lied about it.
She lied about everything.
She didn't write the letter. Somebody else had to write it for her. And she signed her name. But don't say you wrote a letter and then you didn't even read it.
I mean, and then
why would you sign something that you didn't write and then admit that you did it? I mean, I agree with John. She lost all credibility.
She admitted that.
After that.
She didn't say she didn't write it. She said that
she couldn't read it.
She cannot write in cursive.
She couldn't read it.
She couldn't read it. No.
She probably can't sign her name either.
Well,
we didn't find that. But Dave, I agree with you. She lost all credibility with me. Whether she said Trayvon said this, Trayvon didn't say that.
I wouldn't believe that woman
if she told me day was light and night was dark. So I don't believe anything she had to say.
So then you got to admit that Trayvon never said creepy ass crack.
Absolutely. I don't believe one thing she said. She's a non-existent witness.
Okay. All right. That's good. So that takes away from that.
I know you can't pick and choose when they're lying and what they're not. If she doesn't have credibility, she doesn't have credibility about anything. I think John brought up a great point. Said a vivid imagination. She's in a place she's never going to be before. National television, this and that, and unfortunately.
And Sam, I said last week I had a lot of sympathy for her. She was an adverse witness. She didn't want to be there. And the prosecution placed her in an untenable position.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. You know, I totally agree with you, John. You did say that last week. I felt bad.
She's a victim.
I felt bad for her. I felt very bad for her. It's terrible that the prosecution has to rely on with Dave.
She has to be called a moron on national radio by Simon. I mean, what a disgrace that is.
Well,
hey, look,
to be honest with you.
You know, if it makes you feel better, John, you're a moron.
You were going to say that, Simon. I gave you that softball and you hit it out of the park. Good job.
Hey, Jan, is Jan going to defend John tonight? That's all I want to know.
No.
I don't know what difference it makes.
How long will the defense trial phase last, do you think?
It won't. In my opinion,
I asked Mark O'Mara that.
I'm sorry, what?
Go ahead, Dave.
Go ahead. Who was talking?
I asked Mark O'Mara that.
Gonna be on.
He told me that he would expect the rest by next Thursday, no later than next Friday. That's what he told me. Of course, things can change. But,
that would put it right on schedule,
3 weeks.
Now he's going to have his own. We're talking about one more week of trial, right?
Basically, yeah, that's it, and then it'll go to the jury.
If I'm the criminal defense attorneys here, I do not let this case drag out into next week. I put it to rest this week, and Friday seems like a long way away to me. I think I would try and wrap this up by Wednesday or Thursday. I would not drag this out.
You
the
know,
jurors will not like it.
Don't you agree, Peter, too, that the state, because they never proved anything beyond a reasonable doubt, that then the defense doesn't have to put on much of a show.
I don't think they have to do much. I would do a little. I wouldn't overdo it, and I would try and wrap this thing up as quickly as possible this week. That's what I would do. And going back to Chantel, just briefly, I'm not sure it matters whether or not Trayvon said creepy cracker. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that if Trayvon was walking around in the neighborhood and some guy was following him, that was probably a little creepy. And I don't think it matters. I don't think it matters. You still end up with them rolling around on the concrete and somebody, and some sort of altercation ensuing. And at that point, it's just very difficult to overcome that from a self-defense perspective.
Yes, anybody's guess.
Okay.
Now,
in my opinion, the defense on Friday should have just stood up and said, we offer no witnesses. Prosecution has done it for us.
Well, that's sometimes less is more, and it's very tough for lawyers sometimes to just stop. It's just tough. And I tend to agree that my perception from afar is that the defense doesn't have to do much. And my preference would be to get this thing over as quickly as possible. I think maybe you have to put up a couple witnesses, establish a few brownie points, if you will. But I'd wrap it up. That's
well,
what I'd do.
Hey, Simon, you're forgetting the most important question.
Here's,
is the defense paid in one lump sum or hourly rate?
That's a very good point, John. You raise a good point. I suspect maybe they'll drag it out if they're on the hour,
right.
But they're not.
No, they're not doing
Touché.
It for that because they're working off of. But I got one more thing though to say about I think the counter. I don't think that George's mother and certainly not George's uncle provided enough testimony to convince any of the jury of who said what. You know, whether it was George's voice or Trayvon's voice. I think with the benefit of doubt, it'll go to Trayvon's mother. That's the victim, okay? But now, on the other hand, you've got George's father, and I think this is an important person who needs to testify because he was a magistrate. He was like a judge in Virginia. He's got credentials, and he's a person who may be able to counter strongly what Trayvon's mother said about who was screaming. Do you agree, Peter?
Well, I'm struggling to find out what the theory of admissibility is, what the theory of relevance is as to either of these mothers. And the general theory is that the victim's or the defendant's reputation for a particular character trait is admissible to prove, in some instances, conduct in conformance with that character trait. I'm still struggling to find out the theory here. If there's some unique point of view that the father brings to this particular evidence that the mother does not, then yes, Dave, you're absolutely right. But if the prosecution has already thought of this and they've spoken with him and elected not to go with him, they made that decision for good reasons, I presume. And I don't know if you're suggesting that the defense may call him, which to me would just probably be a thunderclap if the father got up there and said something that destroyed the prosecution's case. I don't know if that's going to happen at all.
Okay, folks.
Yeah, I don't know.
I hate to do this, but we absolutely need to close this program down. So I'm going to go from top to bottom, not necessarily in alphabetical order. Peter, your parting thoughts.
Well, it's a very interesting discussion today, and I thank you all very much for letting me be a part of it. You've all taught me a great deal, and I do think this trial is going to wrap up just like every trial does, and we're going to move on to the next one after that.
Right. And there'll be another one for us next week.
Yeah.
I really want to thank you for taking part. I suppose I should tackle the infamous John Perry. John, parting thoughts?
Hey, Simon. Nice to see passions are so inflamed. It was nice having Dave on. I'd just like to caution him, be careful about drinking all that coffee, because the bathroom breaks, you miss a lot of probative evidence, like when a witness discredits themselves. And Simon, thanks for calling me a moron, and tell Jen I said hi. And Sam, take care, bro. Have a good week. Always good to be with you.
Okay. And Dave.
Well, thank you, Simon. Thank you, everyone else. I mean, I really enjoyed this, and I hope that, you know, if you have a show next week and everything, I can be on it and give you more details of what's going on in this trial. But it's certainly an interesting topic. But as far as time to move on to another trial, I don't think I'll be moving on to any more trials because they have to happen in this area. And, you know, I had the Casey Anthony trial here, which I covered, and now this trial, and I sure hope nothing else happens here again. So I'll just spend some time relaxing and writing corny stories.
You can rest assured that if I find an interesting story, you will be the first to hear about it.
Well, thank you, Simon. I appreciate that.
And finally,
Sam is my name.
The lawyers. At some point, you have to deal with them.
That's correct. Last but not least, as they like to say, David, I want to thank you for bringing some a totally fresh perspective. You're there. You see everything. You brought up some great points. I disagree with you on some, but I think you're one of those men I can agree to disagree with and vice versa. Thank you for that. Peter,
yeah,
and John.
It's great. Well, yeah.
Peter, John, and Simon, always a pleasure. Peter, I agree with you 100%. This case is going to wrap up real quickly. I hope the fallout will not be as bad as I'm predicting. But until Ariel Castro's case comes up, we'll see you next Sunday.
All right. Peter, you are one of the best people I know.
Well, you need to know more people, my friend. But go
right.
Ahead.
Well, that's what my wife says.
Well, yeah. No, it's a pleasure, and I thank you all very much.
Do you have any really good cases coming up?
Well, let's see. I've got one that I may be contacting our friend John about, and we've talked about it in the past involving the police force, but that one hasn't brewed yet. The rest of my cases aren't that interesting. I've got a couple of property owners who are duking it out with each other, but other than that, my life is pretty mundane these days. I'll just wait for the next storm to come into my backyard.
I do want to thank all of you for taking time out to, you know, talk to me today. It's been a great program. This is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy and safe day, safe week, and we will be back next week, same bat channel, same bat time. Till then, goodbye.